you know, it's a parent's natural instinct to want to talk to them, like, what's wrong? What's wrong? Talk to us. I think it's important for me to remember to have that same expectation of communication for myself towards the kids too. You know, the internet and social media, there's just so much information coming in. We want to teach her that she can't just physically express her frustration. That translates to love for others as well. Like, mm-hmm. her confidence in herself and her love for herself.
Hey there, I'm Alyssa Blass Campbell. I'm a mom with a master's degree in early childhood education and co-creator of the Collaborative Emotion Processing Method. I'm here to walk alongside you through the messy, vulnerable parts of being humans raising other humans with deep thoughts and actionable tips. Let's dive in together. Welcome to our new limited series, Respectful Parenting in Real Life. I get to hang out with some folks and dive into what this work looks like outside of scrolling through Instagram or that picture-perfect snapshot of respectful parenting. What does it look like when you drop the ball, when it's messy, when we're imperfect humans, or when our kids don't respond perfectly as we planned? Buckle up for some real stories from real humans, and I hope that you get to see glimpses of yourself or your kids in these stories to know that you definitely are not alone in this journey, and there's a village of folks walking right alongside you. All right. Let's dive in. Hey, everyone. Today, I get to hang out with Now. Now, you were on the podcast, what, almost 3 years ago?
Oh, my.
Right?
Has it been that long?
How old is Emily now?
Emily's six now. So yeah, she's going to be seven this year. Yeah.
She was three, I think, when we chatted.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that bonkers? It's been an absolute joy to like watch her grow up through social media. I get these Snapchats. She is, I love her. It's so weird to like love a human you've never met. You've just seen
I know you are the biggest fan, and we say lovingly stalker.
She is just like
very lovingly, we say.
thanks. She is, I love her fire. Like, she's fiery human.
She definitely has that fire.
And I love it. And Maya, I feel like I haven't like stalked as heavily, but seems like such a just like really, from what it seems like from the outside, and you can tell me if this is not correct, but it seems like a really like loving, I would say maybe curious, intentional human.
Yes, very intentional, very yes and curious, yes. But she's very interesting that I have two girls who are so very different, mm-hmm. but they complement each other in their own way. And Maya, she has that quiet fire, I think. Mm-hmm. That's not as obvious, but she's very protective of her sister, and she's very emotional. She's very like empathetic.
Yeah, like attuned.
Yes, she's incredibly empathetic and very aware of how other people feel, mm-hmm. and want to always make the people around her feel good.
Yeah, she's an emotionally sensitive human.
She's incredibly emotionally sensitive. Yeah.
Yeah. I relate to that. Same. I think it's a blessing. And there are parts of it that for me can feel overwhelming sometimes.
Absolutely. Like, you're absolutely right. Like it's a blessing, mm-hmm. and we don't ever want to change that, but at times it can hinder her as well. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to teach her to protect that, but also mm-hmm. to not let it stop her from doing things or saying things.
Yeah, yeah. Like deeply loving other humans and connecting with them. And I resonate with that. And even, you know, as our like platform and our community has grown, that's one of the things that's been hard for me, is that
I am an emotionally sensitive human, and I want to connect with everyone, and I want to get to know everyone. And at about 200,000 folks, like, I just can't, in the same way that, you know, when I met you, it was so much, it was just a few thousand.
And of course, yeah,
I could like really get to know y'all and have these conversations and go more in depth. And I love that. And there's this part of me that like wants to be able to do that with everyone. And sometimes for me, it can show up as codependency of like, I need to be able to help this other person around me feel better. And I've had to like really work hard on allowing other people to have experiences and hard things without me fixing them. Like that's my biggest, that's my biggest work. Yeah. It's a challenge. How old is Maya?
Maya's 9. She's going to be 10 this year.
Okay. When are the girls' birthdays?
Maya's in June. So she'll be 10 in June. And then Emily will be 7 in July.
Okay. Yeah.
Rad. I can't believe it.
It's insane.
We'll have a double digit. And then I don't know, something about the jump from 6 to 7 just makes me feel like.
It feels different.
It feels older. It feels a lot older. Yeah. Like 5 to 6 wasn't that big, but 6 to 7 just feels like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and for those who don't know, when you were on the podcast before, you were on sharing your journey in birth and postpartum experience with Emily and finding out that she has Down syndrome and what that was like from your experience. And Maya does not have Down syndrome. So as we're diving into the conversation today, I'm curious to know, like, we talked a little bit about in your previous episode about expectations and developmental expectations and how what that looks like from kid to kid. And I'm curious to know, when we're chatting about respectful parenting and big emotions and social emotional development, apart from them being truly just vastly different temperaments and humans, which we often see in siblings anyway, just across the board, it's been a cool thing about this podcast series is hearing like, yeah, most households, kid to kid, the way they respond to things is different. But are there any things that are on the forefront for you with Emily living with Down syndrome, being a human with Down syndrome? Is there anything that's like different in that sense, pertinent to that for emotional development? I don't know enough, I guess, about Down syndrome to know, like, is there cognitively, are we looking at like, oh, there are things we shouldn't expect or can't expect at certain ages or stages that you may have expected from Maya?
And throughout our conversation, I only speak on behalf of our family. So, you know, just because a child has Down syndrome, my child with Down syndrome will act and look and behave completely differently than probably another child with Down syndrome. Like, we have friends, a lot of friends, of course, in the Down syndrome community. And yes, there may be certain things that they have in common, of course, just like, you know, any other neurotypical person would have something in common with somebody else. But at the same time, like, they're each their own person. So when I speak about Down syndrome, I'll speak about Emily in particular, and that doesn't necessarily apply to somebody else.
Totally.
That being said, for us, Emily, I think she has a pretty good awareness when it comes to her own, and this is something that's developed over time. So, you know, now at the age of 6, almost turning 7, her vocabulary has been expanding. So when she is feeling a certain way, she's now able to better express that verbally. Sometimes, for example, like Maya, that may be much easier for her to initiate that conversation on her own. So without us having to prompt her, she may tell us how she's feeling. With Emily, she will much more quickly physically express that frustration or that emotion, and we would have to, you know, sit her down and say, Emily, we can't understand what you're upset about unless you tell us. So tell me how you're feeling and tell me why you're feeling that way. And that conversation might just take a little bit longer mm-hmm. than our conversation with Maya, but she's gradually getting to that point where she's gaining the verbal ability to express that.
Yeah. So she's more like in her body in it.
Yeah. Like so it's emotion, much yeah. more quickly, it much more quickly comes out as, you know, whether she's crying or
right.
she'll walk away from us or she'll sit down and turn away from us and doesn't want to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe she'll start to do things to Maya out of spite, like mm-hmm. just pushing her buttons, knowing exactly what buttons to push. She might do that to antagonize Maya, those kind of things.
Yeah.
So it's yeah. very easy to tell that she's unhappy or frustrated about something. It's just not always easy to tell what she's frustrated about. So
totally. Yeah. And when we're looking at this, like my little guy, and it's not true for all humans, for some folks, when you're in an emotion, for some folks, talking is helpful, right? Being able to, like with Sage, he wants to know that we understand, right? So mm-hmm. I can turn and say like, oh man, you were eating and you dropped your fork on the ground. Man, that's disappointing. In our house, he will chuck it. It's not an accidental drop. Mm-hmm. And in our house, if you drop it on the ground, then we're all done with it for that meal. And I will use the fork or I'll use the spoon, but he's not just in our boundary is like, you're not throwing mm-hmm. it and I'm picking it mm-hmm. up. And he knows this, and then he'll go like, like, yeah, you're disappointed. That makes sense, buddy. But he wants that, like, he wants us to talk to him in the moment and say like, I get it, like validate right. what he's experienced.
Right.
And for other kids, if you talk to them in the moment, that's overloading for them, right? Like they right. need time to calm their body. How does that show up with the girls? Is it the same or different? Do they both respond to that talking or do?
Oh, so that's very interesting because Maya is the latter.
Hmm.
When she's feeling very emotional, when she's feeling overwhelmed, or she feels overwhelmed with her emotions. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the times, you know, it's a parent's natural instinct to want to talk to them, like, what's wrong? What's wrong? Talk mm-hmm. to us. We want to make them feel better. But mm-hmm. for Maya, a lot of the times she first needs that space to be on her own, to, you know, sit with that emotion and just get that space for her, personal space for herself, without us bombarding her, being like, let us try to fix it, let us try to talk to you about it, you know, talk to us. So that's been, you know, now that she's 9, we're starting to understand that better, and we're trying to respect that space for her. But that was a struggle for us as well. You know, when she first started kindergarten, she would have been, you know, 4 in Canada, in Ontario at least, they start around 4 years old. And, you know, she would have problems with friends, et cetera, et cetera. And like we said, she's a very emotional child, but she internalizes that emotion. So we can tell as mom and dad, we can tell that there's something wrong, that something happened at school maybe. And we want to immediately talk to her, like, did something happen? This and that. We're asking tons of questions. And all it does is for her to turn inwards more and more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes harder and harder for her to talk to us. So now we're trying to give her that space and time until she can come around and, you know, she's had that time to think about her feelings on her own, and it becomes a much easier conversation for both of us mm-hmm. to be able to sit and talk about whatever it is that's bothering her.
Yeah. She needs to be with that emotion.
Yes. For mm-hmm. sure. And I understand that because I'm that type as well.
Mm-hmm.
If something is happening, if something is bothering me, I don't want people to come and talk to me about it right away. because that is very overwhelming for me as well. Mm-hmm. So as parents, we're learning, and you know, so Maya is that way. Emily, on the other hand, she wants that attention. So she is expressing her frustration physically or, you know, through crying. Mm-hmm. And she wants that attention right away for us to come and say, Emily, what's wrong?
Yeah.
She doesn't necessarily want to talk about it, maybe, but she wants that attention immediately. So she wants that comfort immediately. She wants us to come to her immediately. We have that conversation because we want to know what it is that's bothering her. And we want to teach her that she can't just physically express her frustration, because not everybody understands what's bothering her just through the physical expressions. So we're trying to teach her, you know, Emily, tell us, you have to use your words and tell us what's bothering you and tell us what are you feeling. So sometimes she needs, we don't want to provide them with the language always, because we want them to use their own language to express to us how they're feeling. But for Emily, sometimes she needs a little bit of those verbal prompts. Mm-hmm. So I might give her, are you angry? Are you worried? Are you frustrated? And then maybe she'll tell us, she'll choose out of those words, and then maybe we'll expand on that. Okay, you're frustrated. What happened? Did something happen to make you frustrated? And sometimes she doesn't even then, sometimes she doesn't answer.
Mm-hmm. What helps her calm enough in the moment to be able to access that language? Like, what helps her calm enough to even say, like, yeah, I'm frustrated?
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
For her... Well, for both of our girls, I think physical touch mm-hmm. always helps. So Emily likes to, you know, she needs the hugs mm-hmm. and she needs the tight hugs. So the tight hugging usually will help her to calm her down. Yeah. Maya, now that she's older, initially she'll need that space to herself. So we let her go to her room. She'll close her door. She'll do whatever she needs to do to self-regulate herself. And then once she comes out, she's a very huggy girl too.
Yeah, so snuggly little
thing. The physical hugging and the, you know, rubbing her back, things like that will help her feel more comfortable.
What does it look like for the girls, for each of them, when, you know, I think we talk about this on social media a lot, like here's what it looks like when we respond to their emotions and then they respond this way and great. And like, we know that so much of the time we go over and we validate and we connect and they're not ready or get out the door and we don't have time to like sit in emotion process for 20 minutes and we're going to an appointment or we're going to school or whatever. What does it look like when it is in that like raw imperfect time? What does the repair look like for each of the girls afterwards? Is it the same? Do they like to reconnect in the same way or revisit things in the same way, or is it different for them?
So like, for example, for Emily, our daily struggle is that she loves fashion.
She does.
if you've seen us on social media, you've seen us on Instagram and the pictures, you know, she loves fashion. She's very passionate about it. She likes to pick out her own clothes. She's very independent in that regard. She's not necessarily independent in all fields, but when it comes to her clothes, she loves the first thing she does in the morning before most of us are even out of bed is she changes out of her pajamas. She will flip her room upside down, trying to like pick out her outfit not for the day. I almost said for the day, but it's not for the day.
Because outfit change number one.
Because yes, it's her outfit of the day, number one. And so it's great. We want to nurture that independence of her wanting to pick her own clothes, to change independently. That's a great skill. Like, that's great life skill. And we want to celebrate that and we want to nurture that. But our problem becomes she wants to change all the time.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to change all the time. And, you know, for example, I bring the girls home for lunch during their school day.
Oh, cool.
So we have an hour for the girls to come home, eat lunch, take a little breather, and then they go back to school. For Emily, she eats her lunch and then, you know, maybe she has 10 minutes left and she's in her room trying to pick out a new outfit and change.
Her afternoon outfit.
Yes, of course. Can't be seen in the same clothes in morning and afternoon, God forbid, like unacceptable. So that's a laundry nightmare for me, first of all.
Yeah.
But also like, I just don't want to, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, like it's really not that big of a deal. But also I personally just don't want to make that a habit. Like every time we come home, we change outfits. It's a lot. Or sometimes she'll put on one of her like dress up dresses on top of her already. She's already wearing a dress and she'll put on another dress on top of that. And it's like a huge princess ball gown. And she's like, yep, I'm ready to go back to school now. And we have to have a conversation about Emily. We can't go to school in this outfit. Or like, Emily, you can't change outfits every time we come home. Or like, Emily, you were already wearing another outfit 10 minutes ago. Can you please put that back on? And that's like a huge struggle for me. It doesn't sound like it's a big deal, but when it happens 5 times a day, every single day, it's a lot. So the line between wanting to respect her independence and respect her choice, but also realistically not having like 200 loads of laundry a week.
And right. It's like, where do we put the boundary?
Yeah. The time that it takes for her to change, or sometimes the outfit that she's wearing is not practical. Like you're wearing a bathing suit in January and you want to go back to school. Like, that's not an option. And let's talk about why that's not an option.
I love her so much. It's so good. And I can just like picture her in front of her full length mirror.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. You've seen, you guys have seen her wearing bathing suits in like February and be like, yeah, let's go.
And just the amount that she loves herself in her like outfits.
Yes. And we want to celebrate that. Her love for herself and her, and that translates to love for others as well. Like mm-hmm. her confidence in herself and her love for herself, that translates to others as well. When other people are feeling a little bit down, like when Maya is feeling sad or when Maya is upset about something, she is the first person that will always go to Maya and say, Maya, what's wrong? Maya, you need a hug. Maya, it's okay. Don't feel sad. Like,
oh, sweet babe.
She is everybody's biggest cheerleader. And we love that about her. And we want to nurture that. And we don't, you know,
mm-hmm.
But like I said, coming back to the clothes issue, especially when it's like a time crunch
mm-hmm.
and we got to go back to school or like we got to head out the door for a doctor's appointment. And she's like, yes, I'm ready in her, I don't know, ballet outfit. And it's like, we got to change. And she's pissed.
Yeah.
Because she's like, I'm ready.
Yeah.
This is the outfit that I've chosen. I'm good to go. Let's go. Right. And for us to be like, no, go change your outfit. Sometimes it just turns into like, we don't have time for this. I'm sorry. I'm just going to take this off of you and you're going to be really mad.
Totally.
But it has to be done because we got to go to this doctor's appointment and we're going to be late.
Totally.
So there's no time for that conversation. To say I respect your choice
totally.
And I respect your opinion. However, can we make like no? There's no time for that. And I'm just peeling it off of her while she
right. She
very vocally tells me off.
Right? Does she respond? I'm sure. Does she respond well, or do they help like visual aids of like the timer for when you're gonna go, or is she like, nope, I don't care?
Sometimes I'm not good at warning them giving them advance notice. Now that she's older, I'm pretty I try my best to be like, Emily, today we have this appointment.
Yeah.
And then we talk about that appointment because she has so many appointments.
Yeah.
And it helps her to know in advance who we're going to see mm-hmm. and what we'll be doing there.
Yeah. Well, and maybe what clothes aren't allowed.
Yes. So
like swimsuits, we're not wearing PT or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Now that we're thinking about it, maybe it might be good in the future to also talk about outfit options in that conversation. That's actually a good idea. Like to talk about outfit options and what outfits are not an option. Like, mm-hmm. hey, we're going to the doctor's today. So in terms of outfits, please no princess ball gowns. Please no bathing suits.
Right. Or let's brainstorm together. What are things?
Or ballet costumes, you know, those kind mm-hmm. of things. But yeah, in those. So when we're in a real time crunch, like I'll just pick something out and she might not be happy and we put it on. And I usually will talk in the car with her driving and just be like, Emily, I know you wanted to wear, you know, that outfit. I'm sorry, we couldn't wear that. If you really want to, you could put it back on when we get home.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're going to the doctor's in January, it's cold outside. You know, you see the snow outside. We can't wear a bathing suit in the snow because it's too cold and we don't want you to feel cold. We don't want you to catch a cold, et cetera, et cetera. And mm-hmm. and then we'll also talk about like, and look at your dress that you're wearing. It's beautiful. It looks so nice on you. And you mm-hmm. know, eventually she comes around and she's the type of child that doesn't hold on to those things. So she'll move on. She's good. She'll move on. But
she really likes that conversation, the like acknowledgement of what happened, the feeling behind it.
Yes.
And the why.
And she loves to be acknowledged for the outfit that she's wearing too. So when we do have a little bit more time and she's wearing something that we don't want her to be wearing, I will try to then be like, okay, Emily, you can't wear that, but what else do you want to wear? Let's try to pick something out together. Mm-hmm. So then I'm there trying to you know, gently coax her away from the options that are not
right,
not appropriate.
Right.
and but still let her give her the autonomy to pick something else out.
Right, right. My mom said I was 18 months old when she laid out an outfit and I said different one. So I relate to Emily on this on a deep, deep level. relatable. And yeah, I think also, you know, for me, I think part of it, I'm one of five kids and there was a lot that was outside of my control. I think for kids in general, there's a lot that's outside of their control. And
yeah,
and I think when you're in a family that big, like I was talking to someone the other day who was talking about things that their kid doesn't like to eat. And I literally said, I genuinely don't know if my mom even knew the foods that we didn't like to eat because there was no food choice. But we also were low income. Right. And so like, I didn't have money. There wasn't going to be another meal. My house, it was like, you can eat this or you don't eat, but there isn't another choice. And we're not going to ask you what vegetable you want with dinner or whatever. It's like whatever canned or
frozen. This is what we have and this is what's going to be on the table.
Right. And so I think in a world where looking back, like there just wasn't a lot of choice. Clothing was something I had choice around, right? It gave me like control. I could control that. And I think that was empowering for me, that like that was something I could control. And so when I look at kids and I see them like really, I think the word we often use is like a stubborn or assertive around certain topics, I get curious about that. And maybe it's just like, oh, this was just my experience and it's not for other kids. But I wonder like, are they trying to control something? And this feels like something they can control. Mm-hmm.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
And do you think that comes up for Emily too?
Maybe. I mean, it's definitely a way of her self-expression, mm-hmm. for sure, which is why we also try to nurture that as well.
Yeah.
Because it's her way of expressing herself. It's something that she's very passionate about. So when we're at home and she's going through six outfits, each time she changes her outfit, she expects that reaction from us, that acknowledgement from us. So we have always made it a point to say, ooh, nice new outfit.
She's like, do you see me?
If it's in the house and, you know, it doesn't matter if it's the middle of January or February. It doesn't matter how cold or how warm it is outside. Like if she wants to wear that in the house, we will let her wear that in the house. If her room is upside down, which it is every day from going through, you know, 6 to 10 outfits, that's fine. That's fine. It's her way of expressing herself and expressing her passion. And we want to let her do that. So there are certain things that, you know, I prioritize, and that's definitely one of them. Like, I don't like folding all the clothes at the end of the day, or I don't like doing the extra laundry, but it's something that she's so very interested in and has enthusiasm for. So
yeah, it's important to her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's definitely her self-expression.
Yeah, that's rad. And I think it's tricky and tough. So many things, but to find where's the boundary? What are the boundaries going to be?
Yeah.
And that allow you to continue to be you and to express and to be a part of this family, right? To help in the cleanup or the whatever. And I was a couple years ago, similarly, a friend of mine had a child actually about Emily's age at the time, who very into changing of the clothes also. And she got to the point where mom was feeling really frustrated and annoyed with the mess, with the laundry. And she was like, this has now gotten to a place where we have a disconnect around this.
Yeah.
And so she was she reached out and was like, how can I set boundaries around it? And we just worked together on what worked for them. And for them, it was, you know, she could change a certain number of times in the morning, in the middle of the day, and in the afternoon. And here's a bin of clothes that can be worn at home, but that are not weather appropriate for outside or whatever. And so they could separate it, which gave her some autonomy. And when you took this off, it goes back in this bin. There were certain things that they started to build into place for them. But I think it's all with all of these things, I can find myself scrolling and being oh, should I be doing X, Y, and Z? I think it's always just looking at what feels right for our family, right? And for another family hearing this might be oh my gosh, I couldn't do all the laundry. I would need different boundaries. And for you, it's that works for me. You're in this season. And I guess also that freedom to be if this isn't working in 6 months or a year, and all of a sudden there's a disconnect in your relationship related to all the laundry or the cleaning up or the whatever, then we look at new boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I like that flexibility of the one that we set now or in this season doesn't have to be the one for years to come.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think those boundaries always have to be fluid because, you know, in any given life stage or on any given day, those boundaries might shift a little one way or another. And I think it's important for us as parents to just remember that those boundaries aren't, you know, set in stone, and it's not black and white, and life isn't black and white, and parenting certainly isn't black and white. And we gotta be a little flexible.
Yeah, I think it's been a hard thing for folks COVID-wise to allow themselves as parents to allow the rules in this season look different, right? Maybe we're eating more mac and cheese for dinner, or maybe we're watching more screens, or maybe X, Y, and Z, because it's a part of this season.
Yeah.
That there are other things that's going to help us thrive as a family, or even just survive some days as a family.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You know, that grace to have flexibility. And I think the key with that is acknowledging it to kids, so it doesn't feel like there are no boundaries or that they're constantly changing, but rather you know what? Everyone in the house is feeling kind of sick today. And sometimes when we feel sick, it's really hard to clean up our toys throughout the day. I get that. I'll help you do this today, when normally it's their own job, or maybe we're going to watch a movie that we don't normally do in the middle of the day. But acknowledging that to kids and validating that, I think, can be a helpful part of this.
Yeah. I can't speak for everybody, but for me, as parents, we're always busy, and it's always faster to just do than to talk about it.
Yeah, totally.
And we forget how important that talk is. Mm-hmm. Just like how we as parents can't understand everything that our kids are thinking or feeling without the language, I think we tend to forget that it's the same way for the kids too. Mm-hmm. So instead of just doing because it's faster,
yeah,
I think it's important for me to remember to have that same expectation of communication for myself towards the kids too, so that they understand what we're doing or what we're feeling, and just reminding ourselves to have that dialogue with them.
Yeah, I think for me, that's a huge part of like what respectful parenting means.
Just
like treating them with respect, with the respect of like, yeah, I will communicate with you. That's a part of respectful relationships in my mind.
Yeah.
Like, I don't expect my husband to read my mind. Would I love for him to look around the house and see the same things that I see? Sure. Is it always going to happen? No. And there are definitely times where I'm like, I don't want to have to say, will you do the dishes and the laundry mm-hmm. during this nap? I just want you to see it. And if I just wait and see if you do and you don't, and it doesn't get done, then I move through the day with resentment and anger and frustration. Right. And like part of being in respectful relationships is that communication component. And we did a little staycation getaway weekend a few months ago with a family that were in the same pod, and they have a 2.5-year-old. Mm-hmm. And at one point we were sitting down at the table and eating, and I was sitting next to the 2.5-year-old, and she did some things that was like, for me, it was like nonverbal communication. And she was starting to like push some boundaries, and I could tell she was curious about something. And I validated that curiosity and asked her if she wanted to explore something with my support. And one of her moms was like, oh, you know what I've noticed? She was like, you talk so much to her, like so much more than I realized. And I was like, yeah, I think so often we go through the motions throughout the day, right? And like, we do this when they're young, when they're babies, where we will just like talk, not expecting them to respond, right? Like, I'm going to change your diaper. We're going to get ready to go to the park, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes as they get older, we do less of that. And I think it's something that actually is still pretty crucial, that a lot happens in our brains that we don't say out loud necessarily.
I
think for me, that's a huge part of respectful parenting, is that respectful communication. Not just like saying things in a respectful way, but I'm going to say something at all that like it has been going on in my head. I'm going to communicate it.
Yeah.
What, just as we get ready to wrap up here, what do you feel like is lacking in the respectful parenting world and like communication, I guess, like in social media and out there in the world? Like, what do you feel like is missing?
I don't know. I guess just touching on the same thing that I was talking about just now, about, you know, reminding myself to communicate. I think there's like, in this day and age with, you know, the internet and social media, there's just so much information coming in,
mm-hmm.
whether that's good or bad. And we get so bombarded with the influx of information that we tend to forget to carve out time for self-reflection.
Mm-hmm.
So we're so busy seeing things that other people are doing, whether it's parenting or whatever else, you know, on social media, and we get caught up in, you know, oh, somebody is doing this, or somebody's doing that, or, you know, look how that person is doing that thing. And we forget to reflect on what we're doing in our own life, in our own world, and how that affects us, ourselves, or how that affects the people around us, whether that's positive or negative.
Yeah.
And so you know, we always talk about, oh, you know, I need to stop spending so much time on the internet or on Instagram, looking at other people's lives. And I think it's way harder to actually do what we're saying, to actually put down our phone and actually look inwards into ourselves and our own life and how, what our relationship looks like with our spouse or our kids.
Yeah. Well, it's so easy to enter the comparison, right?
Exactly. And yes, absolutely.
It's so easy. And yeah, I feel it so much. Actually, I was listening to an interview the other day with Brené Brown, and she said she's working with a new business coach that asked her a question that was really powerful for her, and it stuck with me. He asked her, what do you want to be held accountable to or accountable for? And for her, she was like, I sat with that. You know, she's at a point in her career where she has all these opportunities. And she was like, I sat with it and realized, like, I want to be held accountable for being home for dinner with my family, not missing a lacrosse game with my child. And like, when I really think about, like, where do I want to be accountable? It's in those areas right now. And that might change in a different season, but with a kid still in my household and not at college and et cetera, like, that's what I want to be held accountable to. And it was really helpful for me in a season of, like, I think in becoming a parent, comparison increased for sure, but also like being a working mom, right? That, like, I used to have a million more hours a day to pour into work. And now if I'm pouring into work, anytime I'm saying yes to anything, I'm saying no to something else, right? So if I'm saying yes to things at work, I'm saying no to home time or me time or partner time or whatever. And it's, I don't think that there's a balance. I don't believe that it's a balance. I feel like it's a constant kind of juggle of, like,
yes,
what balls need me at this time?
Yeah.
And, you know, just yesterday we had a scenario where it was a day where there were a number of things outside of my immediate family unit that were a higher priority than my immediate family unit. And it was in last month when Sage was sick, that was switched, where Sage came first and family came first. And that's what needed me most in that season. Yeah. And there were things I had to table or say no to in order to show up there. Right. And I think when we're in that comparison space and we're looking outward, what we don't see is that juggle for everybody else, right? That in order to have that certain meal on the table every day, or that craft, or that way of engaging with their children or whatever, they're saying no to other things. And maybe those are things that you don't want to say no to, or you don't have the privilege to say no to, or maybe there are other, like, supports in their life that you don't have access to, whatever. There's so much that we don't see, but what we do is we compare our messy insides to their, like, curated, perfected outsides in that snapshot. And we don't know their messy backstory. Mm-hmm. And I've worked at this point with thousands of families, and I haven't met a single family without messiness it throughout the day to day. Like, there, we all have it, and we all have different messiness, right? Like, different things that for us are the hardships. And I think that's the biggest challenge of comparison, is that we don't know what they're saying no to, or what they're trying to juggle, or what they're wrestling with.
Yeah.
We only see what we're juggling. And then when we see somebody else excelling or choosing to carry, to juggle that one ball and hold that ball up right now, we're like, oh, should I be doing that? And man, yeah. Oh my gosh, I feel it so much. And I think that's so true, that, like, there's so much time looking outward and not enough time looking in to say, actually, I'm doing a pretty good job of juggling all the things right now. You know, like, I got all these things, got all of this. At one point I was in a therapy session, and she was like, all right, just offload everything, all the things in your brain. And so I was writing it all down, and then we put it into categories, like, what fell into house stuff, what fell into job, what fell into kid, what fell into partner, what fell into family, friends, me, whatever. And looking at it, and was like, I can't do all of those all the time at 100%. And so it's always going to ebb and flow, and allowing that ebb and flow to exist is a challenge.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, thank you so much now for sharing.
Thank you.
Today and for that. Now I'm going to be in reflection mode around this today. And thank you for sharing your sweet, incredible little gal.
Thank you.
You're slaying it, mama.
Oh, I don't feel like it.
I think most of us don't.
But thank you for the recognition. I appreciate it. And you're always such a cheerleader for everybody. Thanks. And for us and for Emily, of course. So let's see what she's wearing.
Let's see it, Emily. Oh my God, what do you have on? Hey, Em.
Look at her in her ballet outfit.
Oh, looking fancy, ready for dancing.
Oh, okay. You don't want to be. Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
You don't
fine.
Want to be on camera. That's space. Fine.
Fresh new haircuts over there.
Oh my gosh. Yes. That was another thing that was very emotional for the girls. So it was difficult, especially for Maya, because she's very emotionally attached to her hair. So getting a haircut was a big deal for her. Mm.
Sweet.
But oh, yes, I
feel her
so
in all
much.
Her feelings. Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for
thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the transcript at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community over on Instagram hanging out every day with more free content? Come join us at seed.and.sew. Take a screenshot of you tuning in, share it on the gram, and tag seed.and.sew to let me know your key takeaway. If you're digging this podcast, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We love collaborating with you to raise emotionally intelligent humans.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.